Welcome to TechNerdy Live. We're back in studio at WGN talking with some of Chicago's top entrepreneurs, founders, and innovators. For those of you tuning in for the first time, shame on you. What is TechNerdy? Well, put simply, TechNerdy is where startups go to showcase. Since 2010, nearly 300 startups have been featured by us. And to date, they've gone on to raise more than $260 million in funding. I'm sure we had nothing to do with that. But really, it had a lot to do with these amazing entrepreneurs in Chicago. Craig Vodnik, you are the COO, right?
Yes.
COO of Cleverbridge. Welcome back to the show. Like Ravine, you were on the show, I think it was called TechNerdy Live. Or was it TechNerdy Live or Tomorrow's Business Today?
I think it was Tomorrow's Business Today, right after you'd done the acquisition.
The acquisition was taking place. So welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Yeah. So we obviously just talked about Raise, and it's, you know, very different security. What they're breaching and what you guys work on obviously is different. But for those who maybe didn't catch that podcast, why don't you fill everyone in first in what Cleverbridge is, and then we'll kind of break into, you know, what you guys are up to.
Sure. So Cleverbridge is a global subscription billing provider. We provide a solution for companies that sell online services and digital products around the world. Companies, not that Dropbox is a client of ours, but companies like Dropbox or Netflix, even to a certain extent, companies that are selling their product on a global basis. It's a subscription that you're signing up for. They would outsource their e-commerce and subscription billing to us because we're able to help them do this on a global basis. Who gets billed when, how much? We take care of all of the payment processing, and then we do the global compliance and PCI compliance security for a business. We take care of that, make it easy to plug into, and voila, there you have it.
It's so just that simple.
It seems that way, yeah.
No, I think it's fascinating, and I thought it was a good time to have you on because I know you guys are working on some crazy stuff, but also with the holiday season around the corner, the popularity among us startup companies in the subscription, particularly trying to capitalize internationally, is a really fast growing thing, and a lot of the not even just e-commerce, but just services, SaaS services and stuff that exist that are coming out of the UK, coming out of Iran, coming out of a lot of places that are now entering the US market. And I don't know how, I mean, I'm looking forward to your opinion on this. I feel uncomfortable, even though I know and I've read all about the company, that they're not from the U.S. when I'm filling out my subscriptions and actually giving credit cards. I don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point. I mean, you're kind of diving into a very specific piece of it, which is that each country is now coming up with laws and rules around not only credit card hosting, but personally identifiable information, what you have to do with that. I'll point people if they want to do a search for, look at what Apple and Google are doing in opening data centers in Denmark and around the world, yep, because they need to comply with the global rules that are happening in countries basically everywhere. Turkey, for example, there was a big story recently about PayPal having to shut down their business in Turkey because PayPal was not complying with Turkish sovereignty laws. So they didn't want to comply with it, so they basically pulled out of Turkey. So this creates a huge problem in terms of people in Turkey who want to use PayPal to pay for things or things that they've subscribed to that no longer can be rebilled because the PayPal account is no longer valid.
Yeah.
So it turns into a
Resting in those accounts. I assume that people had money resting in their accounts. If they ran a business like we do, we have money sitting in a PayPal account.
Yeah, Brazil's another good example where the government about 4 or 5 years ago passed a law that said if you want to accept Brazilian real from customers for payment for a product or a service, if you want to accept Brazilian reals and do it through a payment provider, that payment provider has to be based in Brazil. They have to have a local entity. Why do they do that? Why are these countries making these changes? They want to circulate the money within their own country, right? So they don't want the money to go out of the country. That's why there's a lot of pushback right now in Europe around Facebook and Google specifically, where those companies are essentially extracting money from local citizens and transmitting it into the U.S. through corporate profits.
So, we've gotten a lot of flack. I definitely don't want to go on a political rant. We've gotten a lot of flack on the other way, though. I mean, it goes both ways. A lot of U.S. money has ended up going to a lot of those same companies and countries, rather. I don't know. I think it's interesting that they use that excuse sometimes, and it's like, well.
Right. No, yeah. I think it's.
But it's a problem nonetheless.
It's a problem for businesses who have to understand what's going on. And then when they get slapped with some sort of notice, they're like, wait, what's going on here? Or the customer starts complaining, hey, you're not charging VAT correctly in my country. This creates a lot of unnecessary sort of effort for the business. And that's that's a lot of what we take off of people's shoulders.
Well, if your head is spinning, to put this sort of into context for people, I think about it this way, just my own, I'll use myself as an example. Tax season around the corner for people, you know, reconciling all of your bills and budgets and all these other things, and you're trying to figure out like what the tax implications, both city and state and federal, I'm already lost.
Yeah.
Imagine then throwing on the international level and then forgetting about the security measures to this and then forget about all the payment processing just as a whole.
Yeah.
So you guys are like, you know, that's a huge burden that gets removed from companies'
And we're
shoulders.
In a, we're in a really interesting time because I'd say starting about 5-6 years ago, and it's going to happen for a few more years, countries are just realizing that they can make money on this.
Yeah.
Right? So Japan passed a law a year ago that said 8% tax for any digital product being sold into Japan. That applies to every company yeah. that's selling a SaaS solution. So if you have customers in more than three markets, you're likely entering a really big problem. And that's when we come in and generally help people sort of, yeah, solve the issue for them of taking care of all that compliance and taxation risk and putting it on our shoulders because we've been doing it for 12 years.
Totally, kind of, not totally, but a little bit off the side here. Having a lot of experience in this, do you think that the U.S. is like kind of behind a little bit in some of these characteristics? Because I know a lot of my friends who are international business people are from international, and they talk about these taxes and things like this all the time. And for us, we're like freaking out over tobacco and liquor tax and just the dumbest things. I feel like sometimes we miss out. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing, but we miss out this country sometimes in different opportunities that we could make money on.
Well, that gets into a very philosophical.
Yeah, no, you know. I don't mean that. It's very down the middle. I just mean like in general. Do you feel like some of the sophistication in how these things in some of these other countries operate? Do you think it is more sophisticated, less sophisticated than what we deal with here?
It's simpler. It's more centrally regulated, and so it makes it a lot easier for businesses to understand this. I'll give you a quick example. In Germany, for example, in Europe, I think it was about 4 years ago, they passed a law in the European Parliament that said, okay, we're going to change the way we do taxation for value-added tax in Europe. We're going to change it from being an origin-based to a destination-based model. And they gave businesses 3 years' notice that that was going to be changing. And what's the implication? The implication was basically, you know, sort of between 10 and 25%. Some countries were charging 10%, others were charging 25%. So businesses like ours could make the decision, let's open a shell office in Luxembourg at a 10% tax rate so that we can charge all of the customers 10% because that's our origin. Yeah. And it turned into corporate gymnastics. So now the government changed that around, took 3 years, you know, for that to happen. Yeah. It went into effect a year ago. So, but it's much simpler. It's communicated earlier. It's very simple in terms of the numbers. It's not like a quarter of a percent here, eighth of a percent there. You cross a county line.
That's the part I think about. And, of course, there is a big difference in that we are a United States.
Right.
So we all have – it's just a very different political system. But I do think that it is, at least in my opinion, bogging down businesses a little bit. It's making – we have entered a very global economy. And subscriptions and business and e-commerce and everything is just very global. And yes. For us to operate that way, sometimes I feel like is complicated, but that is where it leads to companies like Cleverbridge to, you know, hopefully clean house. I mean, essentially, because you guys are speaking the language that all of us don't speak.
Right. Yeah, no, it's very complex. There's you know, few people that really focus on this that can do it well. And it's so complex. I mean, I think there's, 14,000 or 40,000 taxing jurisdictions in the U.S. So just the U.S. is really complex itself, and you can really... You know, I heard a story that I think it was American or United, one of the two, created an entity that was based in like the western suburbs here. They did that simply to buy
the western suburbs. I live there.
Well, in DuPage County, let's call it.
I live in Glen Ellen.
Okay. But they created this entity, had it based in Glen Ellen, simply and to just do one thing, buy jet fuel.
Yeah.
Because it was lower tax. They would buy it and then pass it over to, you know, the United corporate,
yeah.
Put it in the planes, and they were saving millions, hundreds of millions a year in tax. It just the system we have creates these opportunities.
Yeah, which I mean, you know, and that's where the philosophical part comes in, of course.
Well, and then there's one other part I'll bring up real quick, which is when laws are passed here, oftentimes they'll be retroactively effective.
Isn't that funny though? You were just mentioning how the other ones gave you like a three year run rate or runway, and then here we're like, well, now that you guys are already like kind of cement footed in. Here you go.
So it's even more, as you kind of said, we're behind the times a little bit because it's more complex here because things can happen that are retroactive. So if you're not paying attention, you don't even know that you should have been collecting tax from January 1st or July 1st. You might find out when you talk to your accountant at the end of the year, hey, where's all the tax that you should have collected for this? Just creates a whole set of nightmares.
It's sort of ironic to me, I guess, because especially, well, Illinois is just a state of all states, yeah. Right? But it is ironic to me because we've got this really, really bustling tech community. And we've got, obviously, the West Coast, East Coast, a couple different cities in between that are doing great jobs. Chicago, in my opinion, is one of the top ones. And it's funny to me that in one respect, we're like, light years ahead and we're moving at an insane pace, and yet the most rudimentary part of it, the how you make your money and how you pay your bills part of it, is still like stuck in the mud, which is just kind of crazy.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, it's challenging, and it's I wouldn't say it's crazy that it's so or that we don't do it well, or that it's hard.
Well, right?
It's actually really hard, especially to do subscription billing. I could talk about sort of e-commerce in a global perspective, but just thinking about subscription billing in a domestic market. Right, you're talking about having to know who gets billed when, how much. What about if there's a promotion? Does that promotion last just for the first billing cycle or every billing cycle? When does that run out? And then when you have that part, you then have to think about the rebilling part of it. So if you're rebilling a customer's credit card, and you know you've got credit cards, everybody's got credit cards, those things expire, right?
Yep.
You might have some fraud on there, and just managing in an automated way as effective as possible
to get
the highest conversion rate or renewal rate. That's an art and a science at once.
So, I mean, you bring this up. I think it's probably a good segue here with regard to subscription. What would be some advice you guys would give towards, whether it's businesses or startups that are entering that subscription space? Let's just stick with domestic, but I mean, even globally, like, where should their mind be at? What should they be looking for? How should they be positioning themselves? Obviously, they should be calling you, but in addition.
Right. So, I mean, you know, we work best when companies are selling into at least three countries. So, just to kind of get that out there, we're not really targeting the small companies. It's not really necessarily the right value proposition. But what they should be thinking about is, what's the type of pricing model that they want to have? So an example of that would be, you know, do you want to have three tiers? Is it sort of one product that's a monthly and an annual subscription? You know, do you offer two different options? Those are the kinds of basic concepts that people have to understand, because if you want to do things that are a little more complex, you can't go with just like a very simple payment processor like a PayPal, a Braintree, a Stripe. Those don't have that functionality, and you'll end up getting stuck. The good news is that thinking about like basic things like the pricing model, the promotional model that you want to have, volume pricing, those are the kind of core components that in the early days don't hurt you if you make a bad decision, but those are the things you can really save yourself a lot of time and effort. If you think about what it is that you really want to offer in terms of a pricing model and how you want to price it and collect for it, and then find a solution that at least works for you for, let's call it 18 months, right?
Yeah.
So look forward a little bit into where you think you might want to go, not where you are going to go, because you kind of know that already, but try to guess one step further so you can make at least an educated decision today about what you might need tomorrow. You can never plan 2 to 4 years out because you never know where your business is going to go. You shouldn't plan that far out if you're just starting out, right? Don't spend a lot of time and effort and money on implementing a very complex solution. Get something simple, get started, find out if your model works, and then you can start looking at
optimizing. I feel like that's it's great advice. I feel like that's advice I should listen to myself. I struggle, and I know a lot of business owners and leaders struggle, and this idea that in your mind you know where you want to be, and so it's like, well, I don't want to have to go back and rebuild this, so I get overcomplicated. I put things and driver models together that are like – would make a person insane. They make me insane.
Yeah.
And then I go back and like, well, how many of these things do we actually use? Like none of them.
Exactly.
And then you're going to do it anyway. So you might as well build it simple the first time. And if you get if you hit the scale you thought you were going to get to, you know, there's plenty of help out there for you.
Exactly. It just doesn't, you know, most businesses don't scale so fast that you don't have time to sort of re-architect a couple things.
Yeah.
And, but I would caution people to say that 2 to 4 year timeline, 2 to 4 years into your business, that's usually when you figured out what's happening, you figured out what your business is going to be, the price model, and that's when you can make a bad decision that really hampers you in your 4 to 6 year age of your business.
Very cool. Where do people go to learn more about Cleverbridge? Where do people go to meet more about you and find out and follow you guys?
Sure. You know, cleverbridge.com. We're also on Twitter at Cleverbridge. Myself, I'm on Twitter at Craig Vodnik. I blog on Medium. So my last name, V-O-D-N-I-K. You can search for that. Not too many of me running around out there.
No, I was going to say there's not. And I've read a couple of your pieces, actually, and they're very good. So I recommend this is one of those. This is why I want to have you on. This is one of those areas that I think can be difficult sometimes for people to kind of get through all of the complexity of it. But the reality is this is such an important part of business and the future of a lot of the tech companies that are growing here that hopefully will grow quickly and become customers of yours are in that space. And they better start paying attention to this or they're going to have a really hard time.
Yeah.
Craig, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks a lot, Scott. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Watch this episode and more on technori.com. Follow me at Katoon. And to keep up with future showcases, Technori stories, and The Feed with Sean, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori. Boom. That's a long wrap.